So Eric is going to be talking a bit about strengthening public health infrastructure and the reflections from the Canadian context. Erica?
Well, thanks, Jim, for that kind introduction, and I never censor Jim. So what I'm going to do is actually share with you some reflections from the Canadian context. And when we turn back the clock about 7 or 8 years when SARS hit Toronto, that was really Canada's flashpoint for the fragility of the public health system. And some actually equated it with a system for a country that is developed in, you know, World Bank terms, that did not actually have the kind of system needed to respond to an outbreak like that. So I think it set a number of things in motion. And what I'm going to do is just share with you how we came to address some of our systemic challenges. And I also don't have any relationships to disclose, but I did not show this to my spouse or to my children. So I will talk a little bit about the context, highlight some of the challenges, which I would equate are probably quite not unique to the Canadian context, but shared amongst many countries, highlight some of the efforts to strengthen public health infrastructure, and just leave you with some thoughts about what we still need to do, because the job's still not done. So this is our greatest, you know, top 10. There are less than 10 things here for Canada. I'm not going to go through all of them, but these are some key milestones that really led Canada to pay attention to public health and healthcare. I'm going to spend a fair bit of time on health human resources as one element of a public health system, and also talk very briefly about what we think is an exciting opportunity, one of many, which is the renewal of our health accord, which is the health accord with the provinces and territories between the federal government and the equivalent of states, so our provinces and territories in Canada. Since I've been here, I've been talking in analogies. So our states, your states are like our provinces and territories, and health is a provincial responsibility. But unlike in the U.S., public health is not enshrined in the health accord, and so we do have an opportunity here to really build it in as they reopen this accord. So there have been many challenges that have been documented up to the yin-yang. If there's one thing we do really well in public health, it's document problems. And I think that's great, but we also need to put some attention on the solutions. But these are some of the ones that have been documented in the Canadian context. First of all, we have supply problems with the public health workforce, with an aging workforce. We're aging like the rest of the world. There is an inequitable distribution of the public health workforce within and between regions. Limited surge capacity, which we continue to see every time there is an outbreak, whether it's H1N1 or in the case of SARS. I think this is also something that you know, I spend a fair bit of time in my day job thinking about, and that is there are many silos between academic institutions and public health organizations, and the need to really strengthen those linkages so that we get public policy relevant research happening. And that's not the only kind of research we need, but it is really critical if we want to help strengthen and improve the effectiveness of our public health organizations. So those linkages between academia and public health are critical. Limited access to continuing education opportunities, and that will give me a chance to speak a little bit about the role of the Canadian Public Health Association and NGOs and what kind of role they can play in this respect. And I would argue also that there's a real need for sustainable tracks across the public health career trajectory. I don't know if I asked each of you how you came into public health and what led you into it and why you're still in it, if you are still in it. There are many roads that lead to Rome, as they say, and that maybe is part of the opportunity, but I think there is a lack of sustainable tracks that really help recruit new people into the field. So following SARS and a number of the reports, we undertook an exercise to identify key elements of a national public health system, and some of these are also reflected in U.S. Documentation. And I've touched on some of them, and I'm not going to review all of them, but I do think that they each merit some attention. So one of them that I will talk about is health human resources in greater detail. I'll also just give you a couple of examples of how we've achieved the second last one on the list, which is integration of research and development with practice and programs. So how a research funder, like the one I work for, can really incentivize that kind of research, because we really, you know, people do follow the money, and there is something research funders can do to really create those kinds of meaningful relationships between research policy and practice. But the first thing that we're really quite proud of, and the work still needs to be done, and this is a document available on the web if any of you are interested in it, but we spent a fair bit of time articulating a framework for public health human resources planning. And, you know, it's one of these documents that hasn't left a stone unturned. You know, it's several goals, 86 strategies, and a partridge in a pear tree. But you know, so you can't argue that it's not comprehensive. But all kidding aside, what it really is trying to do is to work within our very, you know, interesting public health infrastructure to really build the workforce. And so this is the pyramid that we've actually are working towards. So again, I can share the slides, but I just want to highlight some of the areas that we've been working on. So at the bottom, this is really some of the basics. And believe it or not, some of this was not yet available in Canada. So for example, when jurisdictions argue for, we need more public health staff, and you don't actually know how many you have, and what distribution and what the makeup is, I think we do a really great job of counting how many physicians, how many pediatric surgeons, how many this, how many that, but in public health, we haven't done such a good job, and so we're very excited to be leading pilot projects in a number of different provinces in Canada now to really get a handle on the mix and composition of public health, and have really spent a fair bit of time, therefore, identifying what are the core public health services, because in order to decide who's in the tent, you really need to understand what they do. And the other exercise that we undertook through a very consultative process is the core public health competencies for public health. And so that helps to get, you know, irrespective of your discipline, get at things like policy and advocacy and management and these skills that are kind of invisible but really critical to having a robust public health workforce. And we are working our way up the pyramid and so have made progress on some of these various fronts. But I'd just like to touch on a couple of examples now. And so one relates to the research, which I've helped to foreshadow. And so this is just one of several programs. One of the ways we've actually tried to support the linkages between research and policy and practice is that we set up 15 public health chairs that were mandated to address a number of public health concerns, had a strong focus on intervention, so their research programs had to be about measuring the impact of policies and programs as opposed to documenting problems, and they had to link up with the public health system. That was a mandated requirement, and they had a strong focus on mentoring and education, because at the same time, we were seeing an explosion of schools and MPH programs in our country. And I know that's not been as a recent phenomenon in the U.S. context, but in our context, certainly it was. So this was just one example of how a research funder really tried to incentivize academia to work very collaboratively, and we've seen some very good results. We're about midway through this program. The second, which is an ongoing funding program, is actually to, and I think a lot of people and a lot of researchers have called and said, what do you mean I can't be in control of the in control of the intervention? And that means that in this case, we're supporting research that's really about studying what we call rapidly unfolding interventions, so natural experiments. So that often means policies and programs that are being developed by others and grafting research onto those. And so we offer that kind of funding, again, to strengthen the linkages between research and practice. So those are just a couple of examples of how we've done try to address that challenge or to, you know, basically to reduce the chasm between academia and practice. On the quality education and enumeration front, as I mentioned, we had a number of programs. We went from about four MPH programs to 15 from the time SARS hit to now. And so we developed some program guidelines to improve, because we do not have an accreditation body. Actually, the only one that exists in the world is in the U.S. It's CEPH, Council for Education for Public Health. And so we looked at their guidelines and we developed our own guidelines. We also have explored models for accreditation for schools and programs. We are not doing a Made in Canada accreditation system at the moment, and actually several of our schools and programs are seeking CEPH accreditation. We also have an emerging network of schools and programs that will look at identifying common areas for curricula and continuing education. And CPHA is, you know, playing a secretariat role in that respect, or hopes to. On the enumeration front, I think I've talked a little bit about those two things, so I won't dwell on those points too much. In terms of competencies, so we've defined core public health competencies. They're available on the Public Health Agency of Canada website. FAC is not a noodle shop or anything. It's the equivalent of the CDC, or as we like to call it in Canada, but it's still in the baby stages because it just was created in 2004. It was one of the recommendations coming out of the SARS report. So we have a very young history when it comes to public health at the national level. We've also undertaken as a country discipline-specific competencies. So we have discipline-specific competencies in nursing, nutrition, health promotion, epidemiology, et cetera. And so that might be of interest to some of you. And so many of them have taken the core competencies into account and looked at how they mesh with the discipline-specific. And I was very involved in the nutrition ones, and so I can sort of, provide further information on those, and I have some knowledge of the others and can certainly put you in touch with those developing them. And then with respect to CPHA, CPHA has taken a lead role in developing training tools for some of the different disciplines, including community medicine. And one of the key needs that came out of some of the consultations CPHA undertook were we need, so these competencies are great, but we're being asked to develop integrated chronic disease programs. So what do competencies look like for that? And so I think the Public Health Association is actually taking the next step of looking at, based on a programmatic thrust that public health is responsible for, what do the competencies look like and what do we need to do to support the public health workforce? Another really exciting initiative is the Canadian Public Health Association Public Health Knowledge Centre. And this is something, that we're just getting off the ground, but I won't read everything that's on the slide. I'll let you read that. But I think a couple of interesting features about it is that we're trying to create a virtual workspace for public health workers. I think as you, for those of you who live in the U.S., you know, you live in a huge geographically disparate country. Well, we have the same in spades. And we have public health workers who are working in very isolated pockets of the country. And so we see this workspace as really a great opportunity to connect a public health nurse in a very northern community with someone in downtown Toronto to learn from each other so that we're not reinventing the wheel. This is not meant to replace Cochrane or Campbell collaborations or systematic reviews. There's a huge effort underway for that. This is really about promoting a community of practice and helping to bubble up some of the emerging practices from public health so people have a place to share that and create online communities of their own. So this is why the tagline is really critical. You know, it's about if public health is your profession, then CPHA's Public Health Knowledge Center is your online community. You know, public health for public health. They have to build it as well. So we're in the early days, and we're looking to get group subscriptions from at the organizational level as opposed to individual members. So I'll just wrap up with a couple of other activities. So I think as Jim's presentation highlighted, policy and advocacy, and those are, I would argue, are core competencies for public health. So some of the things that CPHA has done under Jim's great leadership have been pre-budget briefs. We are very fortunate to be the secretariat and to co-chair, along with the Canadian Healthcare Association, a coalition for public health in the 21st century, which is quite remarkable in that it brings 30-plus non-governmental organizations ranging from dental hygienists to dietitians to healthcare organizations, all wanting to provide a common voice to government about the need to strengthen public health. And so I think we're really fortunate to be working with them. We, I think as any national NGO have been presenting briefs and appearing before parliamentary committees, and CPHA's call to action, while it had a strong focus on the social determinants of health, really tried to underscore the role of public health, the public health system, in delivering on the social determinants of health. We don't have a strong public health system, we will not be able to deliver on the social determinants of health alone. We clearly have to work with other sectors, but from a health perspective, we are the go-to. And then I think we've had more recently, and Jim certainly can help answer any questions specific to some of these items, is really looking at what is the role of public health in some of these agreements that are under negotiations right now between the federal, provincial, and territorial and Indigenous people's health. Public health hasn't been as strongly emphasized, so we really have an opportunity here to reiterate its role. So I think from these examples, you see that we're trying to really be active in advocating, presenting solutions also to government, and also calling for action in a number of areas. So just to conclude, I just wanted to leave you with a couple of sort of thoughts. I think hopefully you've seen from our two presentations, actually, that you need public health leadership at multiple levels, and if you don't build it at each level, then there is a rate-limiting step and a crack in the system, and we still are working towards sustainable investment in public health, and that we also need to strengthen the front line where most of this public health takes place. There's a critical role for having an independent voice, and that's why our association, and certainly APHA has said the same, is trying to diversify its funding base so that it isn't being supported by any one organization, which therefore results in controlling the message a little bit. And so that has been something we've been working at very hard from a sustainability perspective, but also to create that sense of independence. Reorient health services. For those of you who know about the Ottawa Charter, and this is not self-promotion for Canada, but it just happened to be in Ottawa where the charter was created in 1986. We're celebrating its 25th anniversary. And it's still amazing that we're asking to reorient health services in 2011. And I realize that in U.S., you're at a different stage, but I would still argue that in public health, we have to make sure that we don't detract our attention from investing in public health. We can be dragged downstream by healthcare definition of problems that are best addressed by the public health system, but we also need a strong healthcare system. So it's not an either or, but we have to be careful. I've already said this, but I think it merits repeating about really strengthening the coalface for public health, because that's where the public actually interfaces with what otherwise is quite invisible. And then really trying to tap into that community-level creativity, informed by best practices and also promising practices, because this is where culture change can occur and where public health professionals can work intersectorally to really make healthy public policy happen, because we cannot be doing all of this within the health sector. We have to be working outside. And finally, the role of public health in advancing the social determinants of health. And, you know, I'm just going back to first principles, but I do feel that we need to remind ourselves that we're about seeking the root causes of disease and disability, dealing with whole populations. I just use obesity and overweight. You know, it's a population-level concern, yet there's still a lot of pushback to try to address it, not from a social, cultural, and environmental perspective, but fix the individual, get them to lose weight, and, you know, that's the end of it, when in fact we're living in obesogenic environments. But that's the public health approach, is to bring forward the environmental perspective, but we need strong public health workforce to be able to do that. I think the other thing, reflecting back, there's a really great article that was actually published in concert with an IOM report on childhood obesity that really did a retrospective look at what were some of the success factors of public health movements. And social change was clearly something we take for granted, whether it's tobacco or something else. And when we're in the trenches trying to make it happen, we think, okay, are we there yet? And I think we have to really measure some of that incremental change that is really helping us get there. And lessons from tobacco control and others are really critical. And Jim's already talked about this, the real need for interdisciplinary thinking. All solutions don't come from within health, and I think we need to be forging some really interesting and novel partnerships across disciplines, and I would add also across the different sectors. And again, co-option by the clinical care sector is something that I always think is a little bit of a caution. So thanks very much for your time. I look forward to the discussion.